Good evening, everybody. Our entire family welcomes all of you to tonight's lecture, and we thank all of you for coming to commemorate my brother Abram's 20th year at Sun. We all remember Abram as a person who was not only dedicated to his family and to all his dear friends, but was dedicated to the Jewish community as well. He was president of the shul for 2 terms. He davened on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for many years in B'nai Shurin, right here. He was one of the original founders of Phoenix Mikvah. He served on educational boards and was involved in many charitable organizations locally and, of course, in Israel. He certainly was faithfully involved in the needs of the community. One of his most outstanding attributes was being a true Baal Chesed. Therefore, tonight, we are privileged to have Rabbi Pesach Kron speak to us on the topic of Chesed.
It's a tremendous chus for me to have been invited to come to speak on this 20th yahrzeit of Avraham Roditzky. When I was 21 years old, my father, Rav Shalom, passed away. I see Rabbi Yitzchak Rosenbaum here in the audience. Our families go back many, many years, long before my father passed away. But I was 21 at the time, and I had to support my mother and my 6 younger brothers and sisters. And it was at that time, when I was a mile on my own, that I got to know Rav Yosef Roditzky. And he and I had the schus to work together as moilim in Booth Memorial Hospital. Many of you know that he was a mespalel, and he was involved in Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld's community. But we only had that schus for a number of years. It was probably only about 7 or 8 years. And then, unfortunately, he passed away. And I remember thinking to myself about Avraham Roditzky, how he and I were the same. We're both the oldest in the family. We both had to, in a sense, take care of mothers that were broken after wonderful marriages. And we had to take care and be a father to our younger siblings. And so I always marveled at how he was able to do it with strength and with class and with feeling. And it was at that time that I really got to know the family very well. Had the schus to do some of the Einiklach after Rabbi Roditzky had passed away. And I became, if you could say, a good friend of Mrs. Roditzky. Every single time she sees me, tonight she didn't get a chance yet. She's always asking me for my tapes and my CDs. And Faye, don't worry, I have some for you. I'll get it to you. But the truth is that Avram, not only was he the chizuk of his family, but he was also the chizuk of his community. As his sister mentioned, he was the president here, the founder of the mikvah, and involved in every aspect of Tzarchet Tziva v'Yamuna. As a moral, I can tell you that one of the most poignant moments at a bris is when a child is given a name. And when I wrote the Sefer Bris Milah for Art Scroll, my favorite section of the Sefer was about names. And it was something that I was so touched that I saw in the Noam Elimelech and Parshas Bamidbar. The Noam Elimelech writes that when you name a child after someone, the neshamas of the person who passed away and the neshama of the child are connected forever. And I was so moved by that thought, because we all know you're always supposed to use a name of a person who was a tzaddik, a person who had a good life, or a person who represented what you want your child to be. And so it was in the early 1980s, I didn't have a computer in those days, and I took out my manuscript, I took out the piece of paper from the typewriter, and I wrote down the word neshama. And when I wrote the word neshama, I lost my breath for a moment. Because what are the two middle oisiyos? What are the two middle letters of the word neshama? Shin and Mem, Shame, which is name. Which means through the name, the neshamas are connected. The Nun and the Hey, it occurred to me, perhaps on the outside of the word neshama, are Ner Hashem. And Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. Every one of us has that spark of the Rabbanu Shel Olam within ourselves. So the word neshama is giving us two very important messages. One message is that we are each the spark of Hashem. That's the Ner Hashem, the Nun and the Hey outside the word neshama. But the core of the word neshama is Shem, is name. And I was so proud to find out that the three children, Sari Zadara, Amy Kopinski, and David Roditsky, all have children with Avram's name. That means that to them, and to all of us who know these families, that Avram's neshama and Avram's life is worth commemorating. What was his neshama all about? And I believe there's a certain Mishnah and Avos that teaches us what Avram Roditsky was all about. And it's this Mishnah that I'm going to use as a focus of what I'd like to talk about tonight, and how I believe each in our own lives can change and become elevated because we came here tonight. The Mishnah tells us that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked his Talmidim, tell me, what do you think is the finest quality that a person should have? So the first Talmud, Rabbi Elazar, said, Ayin Tova, have a good eye. Never be jealous of anybody else. Somebody has nachas, somebody has a beautiful home, somebody has a wonderful life. Have an Ayin Tova. Look good at somebody else. Don't be jealous. Another Talmud, Rabbi Yeshua, said, it's good to be, the best thing is to be Chover Tov, to be a good friend. And then another Talmud, Rabbi Yossi, said, Shochin Tov, be a good neighbor. But then Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch spoke up. And he said, Rebbe, I believe that the best quality that a person, that a Yid could have, is Lev Tov, a good heart. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Roye ani es divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, shebechlal dvorov divreichem. I see that which Rabbi Elazar said, that a person should have a Lev Tov, that's classic. That's the answer. Because all the other good qualities, having an Ayin Tov, and being a Shochin Tov, and all the other ideas being a chover toiv, it's all encompassed in that concept of having a leif toiv. And tonight I want to talk about how I believe that we can each in our own lives become those people that have the leif toiv. Because that's what Avram was all about. Not only a leif for his community, but a leif for his family. And more than anything else, which is precious to me, the way he dealt with his mother. So zayn gezunt und stark. To me, that kibud aim that he had, the respect that he showed to his mother, was to me the most precious of all, because I felt in my life that I could relate to that. You know, it's very interesting. The Gemara tells us there are three simonim about a Yid. You want to know what the qualities of a Yid are? And if when you think of these three, you'll see to me it seems that they're out of order. But of course, I'll give you my opinion why they are in the order that they are. The first one, the Gemara in Yevamos Yutes Ayin Tes Amud Aleph tells us, Shloisha Simonim Yesh Ba'umazu. There are three signs of a Yid. One, he is a Rachamon. Harachamonim, they're all compassionate people. They care about others. So that's something that we do to somebody else. We care about others. The second is Baishonim. They're more modest. They're more embarrassed. They're not loud and ostentatious. But sneers, not only in dress, but sneers in talk, and sneers in behavior. But that's something about the person themselves. That's not in relation to others. And then the third thing is, goyim lechasodim, they do favors. And when I learned this Gemara, I was wondering, the first and the third seem to be things that you do to somebody else. Shouldn't those be together? The goyim lechasodim and the rachmonim. And then talk about the personality of the individual, baishonim. Why is baishonim right in the middle? And I think that the answer is, because if any one of us wants to be a Goymel Chesed, any one of us wants to be a Rachamon, a compassionate person to somebody else, you have to remember that all Yidden, really true Yidden, are Baishonim. They're sensitive, they're sneezdik, they're self-conscious, they don't want to feel that you're their mitzvah, that they are your mitzvah, they're your esrik, they're your lulav. When you have compassion and you want to do a chesed to somebody else, remember he's a person also. You want to help somebody, so you're the person, that forgiving person. But remember, they are bishonim. They have sensitivities. You can't just go and give a poor person money and say, "Here, I know you need it." It's awful. And I want to tell you something that has tied me to the Radisky family in a very special way, just because of this chazal. A number of years ago, I was asked to come to Eretz Yisrael and to see a wonderful organization called Birchas Rivka. Birchas Rivka was started by a cousin of Avram Radisky, by Yitzchak Kitay. And I remember Mrs. Hollander was there with us, Faye was there with us, and Rochelle was there with us, and a whole many different families were there, and we saw the wonderful organization of Birchas Rivka. And you know what the tremendous aspect of that is? They're helping people. They're Rachmanim, they're Gomel Chasodim, but it's with great sensitivity. That organization helps people on both ends of the spectrum. Young fellows that are learning and they need a parnasa. So, if a young fellow can't be supported by his family members, they can get a job over here. They're working part-time and they make the most beautiful cabinets. You have to see the cabinets to believe it. It's a fabulous video about that organization. And it makes these people feel they're doing something for Klal Yisrael. Because who are these cabinets and beds and shelves, all these closets? They're going to the poorest people in Yerushalayim. So on one hand, you have people, Kailu Chevra, that are able to make parnasa, and they feel good about themselves. They're doing something, and they're earning some money. So it's compassionate. You're helping Kailu families support themselves by giving them a good job. And then on the other hand, those people that are getting these closets and these beds that are made from the most magnificent types of furniture that you ever saw in Eretz Yisrael, the poor people who get it, they feel also special because people are out there helping them and getting it for them and giving it to them, but they're covered. That's what the Radisky family is all about. That's what Avram was all about. That's why I was so proud to be able to come here tonight and talk not only about Yitzchak Kitay and his wonderful organization, but what Avram was and what everything that he stood for. You know, there's a very interesting Mesilas Yesharim. The Mesilas Yesharim tells us that we have to be so careful when we want to be a Baal Chesed. Everybody wants to do good, right? But he says, "V'hine mashet zorich lahavin." He writes this in Perek Chof. What you have to understand, ki ein l'dion divrei hachasidus al marei an harishayim. You can't just take a look and say, you know, I'm going to do something that looks great. It's an act of chesed. You have to be sensitive to what you're doing, because he says sometimes ki l'pa'amim hamaisa ba'atzmai, the act itself looks good, but really a person is a choyte v'loy chosid. He's a sinner and he's not a chosid. And Rav Pam picks up in his wonderful sefer called Atara Lamelech. I would advise every single one of you to get it. It's written in Ivrit Kala. It's written in a very simple Hebrew. And Rav Pam told me when he gave it to me that he edited every word of that sefer 8 times. It is sugar refined. And you take a look at that sefer and he quotes this Mesilas Yesharim and he gives a number of examples. And I like 2 of those examples that he mentioned. He said, imagine a guy wants to take his friend to the airport. The guy's going to Kennedy or he's going to LaGuardia or whatever. So this guy's going to take his friend 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, right? He doesn't have to take a taxi. He's going to take him. Big tzaddik, right? Guy doesn't have to spend money on a taxi. But his wife is waiting for him for supper. And the kids are waiting at home. And the kids only see the father in the evening because he's out all day and he's out all night. And that's the 1 hour that he gets to spend with his wife and his children. But he's doing a chesed. He's taking his friend to the airport. That's not a chesed. That's a choyte. Your wife is also a person. Your children are also people. They have to be taken care of. Rav Pam writes, somebody who does that may think that he's a chesed. But he's not a chesed. He's a choyte. And then Rav Pam writes another thing. He says, mitzvah gedoyla. It's a very big mitzvah.
Isn't that a nice mitzvah to sing and dance with a chasam akala? That's great. Yeah, avarabe einai. It's very bad in my eyes, Rapam writes. Those guys who dance till 12 o'clock at night, and who is babysitting for his kids? His parents. His elderly parents are sitting, and you know, a mother is a mother until she's 97, right? So she's not going to sleep, right? A babysitter maybe will fall asleep. Your mother's not falling asleep until you come home. So now the poor woman is waiting, right? Until this guy finishes dancing, he's a friend of the chosen. So what? That's a reason to keep your parents up? Ooh! Simchas chosen v'kala, right? Kol chosen v'kol kala, right? Kol chosen v'kol kala, right? It's beautiful. No, it's not so beautiful. You have to understand, you have to look at the broader picture. And when you look at the broader picture, then you understand what is a chosen and what is a chayte. So you know, it's so appropriate that we should be meeting right here, tonight, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera. Because after all, we all know the Gemara tells us in Saita Yudala Ramad Aleph, Achrei Hashem Alekechem Telechu. You should follow Hashem. So the Gemara says, V'chiyev Shaloi La'odom Lahalech Achrei Hashchina. How could you follow the Shechina? How could you follow Hashem? So the Gemara says, Ela Lahalech Achrei Midoisem Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You got to be a Baal Chesed, just like Hashem is a Baal Chesed. And in this week's Parsha, we have that Chesed that Hashem was a Mavaka Chayla, right? Right after the Bris. So therefore, how appropriate it is that it comes out this year, the 20th Yahrzeit of Avraham Adiski, that right on the night when we talk in the Parsha of the week about Chesed, and the Chesed of Avraham, right, as we're going to talk later. You see, everything is coordinated, everything is orchestrated by divine design, and therefore this week is a Parsha that we should talk about Chesed. So I just want to end one more point talking about Avraham, and then we'll talk about Menschlichkeit, and we'll talk about Chesed in general, in a way that will affect each and every one of us. You know, in an Ovel's home, there's a very classic Perek in Tehillim that we say. And then there's a famous Pasuk that says, Ki loy b'moysay yikach hakoel. The Pasuk tells us, Al tira ki yashe ish, don't be intimidated if a guy is wealthy. He's got a big house, he's got big finances. Don't be intimidated by this guy. You can't take it with you. This person doesn't take it with them. So the Shevet Musar says a wonderful pshat on this expression. He says, you know, you can't take everything with you, he says, about every individual, all of us. Your reputation stays here. You can't take it with you. That stays here. So when a person is a good person, he has to know that that reputation is going to last forever. And if chas v'shalom, a person is a terrible person, he shouldn't think that just because he dies, people are going to forget about him. You don't take it with you. Your reputation stays forever. Isn't it incredible? 20 years later, we're still talking about Avraham Adiski. That's what kind of wonderful person. He didn't take his reputation with him. He left it for us. He left it so that we should be able to learn from it. And that's the reason that we come together. And everything that we say here tonight should be a schus for his holy neshama and all the good that we will learn to be able to do and change should be a schus for his heilige neshama. Now, I had no idea there were going to be so many video cameras. Maybe I would have won a wonderful middle loud tie or something. You know, I didn't feel like a celebrity. But I want to tell you, of course, this is the family, those two that are standing over there, those video cameras. But I want you to know about this video camera right here. Because this video camera, which I had no idea that's going to be here tonight, is one of the most chashuva organizations that Klal Yisrael has today. Now, those of you who have the web, not everybody has the web, and I'm not encouraging you to have the web, but those of you who have the web, and you want to look at it, I'll tell you where to go. You should go to TorahAnytime.com. That's what this video camera is. When you go home tonight, if you have the web, you go on TorahAnytime.com, without exaggeration, you will have the opportunity to see over 2,000 shiurim from every spectrum that you can imagine. Obviously, Orthodox, we're talking. Men, Rabbonim, Rosh Hashivas, Askonim, women teachers, all kinds. It is phenomenal. And wherever I've gone in the world, I've told people in Santiago, and I've told people in Australia, in Edmonton, all over. And I'm telling all of you tonight that if somehow Rochelle doesn't get you that video, just go on TorahAnytime.com. You'll be able to see it. It's a wonderful organization. Hashem should bless you. I don't know. Every time I sneeze, this guy's behind me. I don't know how he even knows wherever I am. I want to tell you a great story. And I am thrilled that Rabbi Sherman is sitting here. I had no idea you were going to be here. I still don't know what you're doing here, but I'm sure you're related somehow. But he knows how much I love his father, and I'm going to quote his father in a minute. And I had no idea that you're going to be here tonight. Many of you know that I write books on stories, and the reason that they come out reading so smooth is because his father, Rav Nosson, is the greatest editor in the world, and he's the one who makes me look good. So, a number of years ago, I heard a story that I thought was fabulous. And I want to give you the background of this story first so that we should be able to appreciate it, because actually, it talks about being a lev tov and being a sensitive person. So I want to give you the background. Rabbi Saul Salanter once came into a town to give a shiur. And there was a 9-year-old genius child that was sitting and listening to that shiur. That 9-year-old eventually became the Gadol HaDor. His name was Rav Chaim Oizer Grozinski, the Rav in Vilna. Harvey Horn and others, we were together, Mr. Seidel, we were together at his kever, the experience of a lifetime, as they will tell you. So Rav Chaim Oizer, when he was 9 years old, he's listening to this shiur of this great tzaddik, and Rabbi Saul Salanter asks a question, and Rabbi Saul Salanter presents a teretz. After the shiur, this 9-year-old boy goes over to Rabbi Saul Salanter and says, "Rebbe, I would like to present a teretz, an answer to this question." Can't believe it. 9-year-old kid. Well, yes, my kid. What do you want to say? And he quotes a Tosfos in Sanhedrin, and he quotes a Rosh from Bava Metzia, and he gives a teretz to the question. Rabbi Saul Salanter was stunned. He couldn't believe it. Who is this child? And he finds out. His name is Chaim Oizer. And he gives him a kiss on his head, and he gives him an interesting bracha. The bracha was, you should find a wonderful shidduch. That was the bracha. Sure enough, a bunch of years later, they read a shidduch, this Chaim Oizer, to Rabbi Saul Salanter's granddaughter, his daughter's daughter. So they write a letter to Rabbi Saul Salanter, and they say, "Nu, what do you say? We know you always talk about this boy. What kind of tzaddik he is." So the Talmid HaChachamim here will pick up in a moment that the Melitza, the Pasuk, that Rabbi Saul Salanter wrote, of course, that's not the pshat in the Pasuk, but he meant to give a message, an important message. And he says, in the Torah, it says, "Esbiti nosati le'ish hazeh." I gave my daughter to this mensch. And he says, find out. I know he's a Talmid Chacham. I can tell you, from 9 years old already, I saw he's a Talmid Chacham. Find out if he's a mensch. If he's a mensch, let the shidduch go through. If not, just because he learns doesn't mean that you should marry him. It could be whatever, but not for my granddaughter. And of course they found out that he's the greatest mensch of all, and that's exactly who Rav Chaim Oizer married. He married the granddaughter of Rabbi Saul Salanter. At that wedding, Rabbi Saul Salanter gave a gift to the young chassan and kala, gave him a becher, a kiddush cup. And of course this was treasured by Rav Chaim Oizer. Many, many, many years later, Rav Chaim Oizer gave this becher as a gift to another tzaddik who was getting married, a young man. His name was Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. And Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, him and his wife, they were so proud. You know the story? Okay, the sender knows everything. What should I do? So Rabbi Saul Salanter had given the becher to Rav Chaim Oizer, and Rav Chaim Oizer gave it to Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, and they used it every single week. Fine. Eventually, Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler came to Ponovich, and he was the Mashgiach in Ponovich. He was there for a number of years, and then eventually Nebuch, his wife, passed away. And he was sitting Shiva. We all know, Rachman al-Tzlan, somebody sitting Shiva, Erev Shabbos, you stop the Shiva, and you celebrate the Shabbos, and then a person goes back once the Shabbos to sitting Shiva. So one of the Talmidim that was there, who today is very chashuv a Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael. So he said, "Rebbe, should I set the table?" He said, "Yeah, please do me a favor, set the table for Shabbos." And the boy, the young boy, took out the becher that they used every week, and he put it on the table. And Rabbi Shul, and Rabbi Yodas said, no, don't use that becher. There's another one. See that one in the break front? Use that one." The boy was surprised. Every week they use this one. Now he wants to use another one. He wasn't going to say anything. There were a few people still in the house. He didn't want to ask his Rebbe in front of everybody. So after the meal, he goes over to his Rebbe. He says, "Rebbe, I hope you don't mind my asking, but why did you want to switch the becher?" So he says, "I'll tell you why. He says, you know, he gives him the whole history as I gave you. Yisrael Salanta gave the Becha to Rab Chaim Moshe. Rab Chaim Moshe gave it to me. And we used it every single week when we were in England and Gateshead. But then when I moved to Eretz Yisrael, we moved to Bnei Brak. And the first week that I was in Bnei Brak, I found out that the Chazon Ish feels that you got to use a bigger bracha, you have to have a larger size than what that was. So I decided, listen, Chazon Ish is the God Lador, he's the Rav of the city, and we live right here, so for sure, I have to use the Chazon Ish Yashir bracha. So that's what I used Friday night. After Kiddush, my wife said to me, hey, what happened? What happened to the regular bracha? How come you didn't use it? So I said, well, you know, now we're in Bnei Brak, and it's the Chazon Ish Yashir bracha, and he holds, you got to use it. So she said to me, what do you mean? It's good enough for Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. It's good enough for Rabbi Chaim Moshe. It's not good enough for you. So I went back to using the Becher. So I used the Becher every week. But now that she passed away, I feel it's proper. I should use the Chazon Ish's Becher. When I heard that story, I was crazy. I couldn't. It's so beautiful. Such shalom bias. Really, he believed that he should really use the Chazon Ish's Becher. But he was so sensitive to his wife's feeling, and that's why he used the Becher. And you know, I never tell a story in public, or I certainly wouldn't write a story until I try it out, you know, at my house. Send the nose. We used to have, you know, many guests at the house. So we try it out. And it was incredible. Every man loved the story and every woman hated it. Including my wife. And I said to the people around the table, isn't it a great story? And every wife said, no, it's awful. I said, why is it awful? She said, every woman said the same thing. Her body's not even cold yet. And he's switching to Becher? I couldn't believe it. So, you know, I wanted to write it in the Magid book, so I called Rav Nosson Sherman. I said, Rav Nosson, what do you say? I'm going to send you a story. Tell me, what do you think? He says, it's a great story. I said, nah, you don't count. You're a man. So I didn't print it. And I didn't print it in one of the Magid books until I read what you can't call a book, but a Sefer Kodesh Admiyoid, Rav Eliyahu Dessler's biography written by Jonathan Rosenblum. And in there he writes an amazing thing. The day of the Levaya of the Rebbetzin Dessler, Rav Eliyahu Dessler is about to go to the funeral, but before he goes back into his room, and one of the Talmidim goes in and sees he's polishing his shoes. He says, Rebbe, what are you doing? You're going to a funeral and you're polishing your shoes? He said, no, my wife always told me that wherever I appear in public, whenever I appear, I have to appear immaculate. Oh, so we see that even after his wife passed away, he's still thinking about her. And he still has COVID and her ideals in mind. So the fact that he switched to Becha was not, chas v'shalom, a lack of COVID to his wife. Adrabba, he had COVID for his wife all the time when she was alive. And after she passed away, so there's no question he's going to polish his shoes because that's what she wants. But he felt out the covet of the Chazon Ish, so therefore that's why he has to do it. To me, that's menschlichkeit. That's sincerity. You know what I think menschlichkeit is? I believe that if we would define this act of menschlichkeit and think about it every time before we talk to someone or every time before we do something, I think we would all act different and we'd speak different. I think menschlichkeit is the act of being a kind, caring, sensitive person who thinks of others besides themselves. Again, I just want to repeat it. I think menschlichkeit is the act of being a kind, caring, sensitive person who thinks of others besides themselves. And if you would think about the other person as an individual, you wouldn't say half the things that you say to other people because you wouldn't want anybody talking to you like that. And you wouldn't do some of the things that you do to other people because you wouldn't want anybody to act that way to you. And that's what being a Baal Chesed is all about. That's what being sensitive is all about. It's not just the act of doing a good deed. That's what our palm brings from the Nesil Yesharim. A person could do and act a good deed. He's not a Chosid, he's a Chosid. I want to give you an example. I remember, it's about 2 years ago, I went to visit Tzvi Menachem Oval, Rachmana Litzman, an 80-year-old woman who lost her husband. They had a marriage, a wonderful marriage for many, many years. He was a chosim, a talmud chacham, he was a Rosh Hashiva. Now, one of my sons married into that family, so that's how I got to know the family. And I don't want to say in what area this was, shouldn't be a reflection on the area. I come in, and I'm talking to the lady. And she's crying. She had such a wonderful marriage, so many years. Her husband was such a talmud chacham. And as we're sitting and talking, all of a sudden a woman walks in, and she's dressed as if she's going to a Halloween party. Orange dress, orange hat with a feather. And I'm thinking, this is how you come to be Menachem Mendel? Where's the sensitivity? Somebody's on the way to a chasana, you're on the way to a bar mitzvah, you're dressed to kill. So you're going, that's how you go to be Menachem Mendel? But that was not the worst. The worst was that as she's sitting there listening to this almana who's crying, this lady in orange gets a call on her cell phone and she answers it in front of the Avela. It took all my self-control not to pick her up and throw her out the window. Cell phones have made us lose all the decorum. It's incredible. You ever go to an airport? You walk in the airport, sometimes you walk in the street, these guys are talking to themselves. You don't realize, they sound like Meshugoyim. Of course, they don't realize, they got the Bluetooth in their ear. Do you know what Rabbi Moshe Wolfson once said? Anybody who owns a cell phone, it's a shayla. If you can make the bracha in the morning, shalai yasani ovid. Isn't that incredible? We become slaves to our cell phones.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, this is not a reflection on my dear friend in Monroe. I have a citizenship friend in Monroe. I love the guy. So I remember one time he was going to invite me for Shabbos. So I said, you got a number? He says, what do you want, my private cell phone or my public cell phone? So now we have two madrigas. We have a public cell phone and a private cell phone. I heard, I didn't see this. Thank goodness I didn't see this. I actually heard that there was a guy who was davening Shemin Esra. He was the shatz. The shliach tzibur. And as he's davening, he gets a call and he takes out his phone and he's texting. Because he knows the words of Shemin Esra by heart, but he can text with one thumb. Could you believe that? Who's he texting? God? It's unbelievable. Cell phones have taken over our lives in a way which is absolutely disgraceful. And that's a lack of sensitivity. At a simcha, at a bar mitzvah, at a chasana, but the worst of all is an oval. What did we do 10 years ago before cell phones? In my humble opinion, every one of us, when you walk into a shul, you should shut your cell phone. This is not your office. In the Yom Kippur of North Miami, they have a great sign right outside the shul. Unless you're expecting a call from God, please shut your beeper. So why are we like that? Why are we so insensitive to others? And I'll tell you what I believe the answer is, but I want to tell it to you with a story. I remember in Borough Park there was a very big tzaddik. Rav Shlomo Shradron took me to him. That was the first time that I met him. Rav Eliezer Kirzner. He looked like a malach alekim. Rav Eliezer Kirzner once went up to visit in Kfar Chassidim and went to visit his friend Rav Elia Lapian. So he stayed overnight, and then in the morning he noticed an unusual thing. Rav Elia Lapian was about to go to the yeshiva in Kfar Chassidim, and he's standing by the window of his own home and he's saying this pasuk over and over. V'loisovi toyeva el beisecha. Do not bring an abomination into your house. V'loisovi toyeva el beisecha. That means don't bring an avodah zara. And Rav Kirzner is wondering, what is Rav Elia talking about? What avodah zara? Who has avodah zara today? So he goes over to listen, like, you can't believe that's what he's saying. So Rav Elia turns around and he says, Rav Kirzner, is everything okay? He says, what's up, the Rebbe? What are you saying? So he said, you know, we're going to go to the yeshiva in a few minutes. It's a big oilam there. Many chashiva tamid chachamim, many chashiva bachrim. They all wait for me for Shema. They all wait for me for Shema Nesrei. A person can become very haughty when the whole yeshiva stands up, the whole yeshiva waits. The pasuk says, "Toyavat Hashem kol gvaleiv." It's an abomination. Anybody who's haughty. So I'm repeating and I'm fortifying myself. V'loisavi toyeva el v'secha. Do not bring that abomination of haughtiness into your house. I believe that's the reason why we're so self-centered and why we say things and do things without thinking to somebody else. Because many of us deep down believe we're God's gift to mankind. And if somebody believes that God's gift to mankind, then everybody owes you the covet. What do you mean you didn't get the aliyah? What do you mean your wife didn't bring you the suit or the milk or the coffee? Or the wife feels the husband didn't pick up what she was supposed to do for the kids? If a person believes that they are God's gift to mankind, and many people believe that they are, that's the beginning of the end of relationships. That's how families fall apart. That's how communities fall apart. That's how Klal Yisrael falls apart. Now we all know Rav Nosson has told me many times, and Rabbi Twersky says it himself. He's written one book with 40 titles. Every other week he's coming out with another book, right? It's all the same thing, self-esteem. Right? Self-esteem. You're allowed to have self-esteem. You could believe that you're capable. But you have to believe there are other people that are good people out there also. Other people could also accomplish. You're not the only one that could accomplish. So how are we going to change that? How are we going to change our attitude of what we think we are? And I believe the answer is two words. Hakarat Hatoyv. Saying thank you. If you would say thank you to every single person who did you a favor, even if they got paid for it, you'd be a different person. Think about it. How often do you go over to the Malkoira to say thank you for laying? Anybody here who's ever had to prepare a parsha, or has a child, or has a husband who prepared laying, knows it takes hours. Do you ever say anything to the Malkoira except that he made a mistake? And heaven help him, if he made three mistakes before Shani, then the whole school is listening already. They know they got a carbon. Because if he made three mistakes by Shani already, who knows what's going to be by the time Mafter rolls around. Right? Do you ever go over to say Ashikayach? To the Baal Tfilah? The Baal Shacharis on Shabbos? The Baal Musaf? They asked you. You didn't want to do it, right? And the lady behind the bakery? And the taxi driver? Every time I travel on the plane, and I travel a lot these days, I always make sure to go up to the pilot. Okay, after 9-11, it's hard to get to the pilot. Especially if you're a moil and you don't know what you're carrying. Whatever, right? Believe me. Want to hear a great story? It has nothing to do with the speech, but I'll just tell you. Because we're talking about elections. A couple years ago, when Lieberman was running for vice president, I got a call. I had no idea he was going to be there. I got a call. There's going to be a very special Sandik, and you got to come on time. There can be no excuses. You must be on time. The Sandik is on a very, very tight schedule. So I come up to Bridgeport because he was in the show by Rabbi Epstein, who was Rabbi Epstein's grandson. And sure enough, it's Lieberman. I see Secret Service, on top of this, on the roof and the cars, the guys with the beepers and the radios, everything. Fine. He's the Sandik, and he's the most wonderful, kind, respectful person. Swears out, a wonderful person. Afterwards, one of the Secret Service guys comes up to me and says, there was a gun on you the whole time you were doing the bris. I said, first of all, thank you for not telling me in advance. Second of all, why did you have a gun on me? He said, well, you had a knife 2 inches from his heart. Can you imagine? So, you don't think about it that way. So when you're on a plane, you're going to a bris, so you got to be careful. Except, like last week, right? Your father and I went on a private plane, 7 people. Then even the pilot takes your luggage. We went to Schottenstein's grandson together. So you could carry a knife, a bomb, doesn't make a difference. If you're on a private plane, you can do whatever you want. What my favorite story about Hakaras HaTov is? My favorite story. The cute little kid. He comes into a fruit store with his mother. So the man behind the counter gives the little boy a banana. So the mother says to the little boy, what two words do you say to the nice man behind the counter? Little boy says, peel it. Because the kid never heard thank you in his life. It's legendary. People know that at an Aguda convention, a Charm Shara convention, after the convention, Rapam used to go into the kitchen. He would go into the kitchen to say thank you to the cooks and to the caterer and to the waiters and to the waitresses. Whoever says thank you to a waiter or to a waitress at a wedding. Rapam did. That's part of chesed. You know what chesed is? Validating another person. When you do a favor for another person, you're validating their existence. That's how you have to look at it. And if you do it in such a way that it's demeaning to them, then you're not validating their existence no matter how much money you give them. So I want to tell you a great story. It's one of my favorite stories. It's a little embarrassing because it has to do with me, but it's a great story anyway. Listen to this. I have the opportunity to travel many places today. So I don't know if you've ever traveled in LaGuardia Airport at the Air Canada Terminal. The Air Canada Terminal is like a big U. You go through security, and then there's 40 gates. And my gate is always the last one, number 40, on the other side. Always. I remember a couple months ago, my wife and I were in Atlanta. I take a look at my boarding pass, gate 1. I said, it's impossible. We never have gate 1. She says, but that's what it says. I go through security, 1 is on the other side, all the way at the end. They start counting from the other side. Okay, fine. Very good. So now, I'm sitting, I go through security, I'm on gate 40 waiting to go to Toronto, I've got my laptop, trying to work on something. All of a sudden, I see it gets very quiet, and everybody's looking up. When everybody starts looking up, all of a sudden you try to look, what's going on here? And they look, they see there's 2 security guards, and they're going through every gate, and they're looking for somebody. Like they're looking for Osama. Like, what's going on here? So, everybody's like nervous, who are they going to find? And then they come to our gate, and they walk over to me. Oh, It's very embarrassing in front of everybody, right? And I stand up. I say, gentlemen, can I help you? And the guy takes out a cell phone and he says, is this your cell phone? I said, no, officer, I've got my cell phone in my pocket. I always carry it in my left pocket. I can't believe it. I'm Amish. I don't have it. It's impossible. I take a look. It's my cell phone. I said, sir, how'd you get my cell phone? He said, well, you're carrying so much stuff. You had 5 bins of stuff that you're carrying through. You took only 4. You left your cell phone. I said, you know, I can't thank you enough. I have 400 numbers programmed in my cell phone. You know what it would have meant to reprogram it? I said, you know, I just want to ask you something, officer, if you don't mind. You know, there's 2,000 people in this terminal. How'd you find me? How'd you recognize me? So I thought for sure he was going to say, you're the only guy with a black hat. That's what I thought he was going to say. That's not what he said. He said, do you remember what you said when you went through security? I said, no, what'd I say? He said, you stopped, you looked at both of us, and you said, thank you, gentlemen, for being here. 5 or 10,000 people go through here a day. Not one person says thank you. You said thank you. We were going to find you if you were the last guy in the terminal. Could you imagine? Besides the Kiddush Hashem. Don't we feel safer because they're there? Shouldn't we say thank you? Would you like to have a job where you have to smell 5,000 pairs of socks a day? You ever think of it that way? What kind of job is that? But somebody's got to do it, right? So, you say thank you to them. They're also human beings. Makes no difference where they come from or what their skin color is. They're human beings and they're doing something for us. So wherever I go, I tell the story because I believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the essence of the glue of Klal Yisrael. So a couple weeks ago, a guy calls me up. He says, you're never going to believe this. He says he was in Air Canada at Kennedy Airport. You know, these guys probably switch around. And he's going through Air Canada, and he says thank you to the guy who's at security. So the guy says to him, oh, you heard the rabbi tell the story? Could you imagine? There's another way that I believe that Chazal teach us in a remarkable, remarkable way. What it means to be sensitive to others. You know, there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that we all do, but we don't think about it. And if we think about it, perhaps we don't really realize what the Mishnah Berurah tells us. Did it ever occur to you, why do we cover the challah Friday night? So most people feel because of the mon. The mon was also covered, and just like the mon fell, there was a cover on top and a cover on bottom, so that's what we do to the challah as well. But the Mishnah Berurah tells us a different reason. B'tur b'shem ha-Yerushalmi. In the Torah, it's written in the name of the Yerushalmi, Shelo yireh ha-pas boishtoi, that the pas, the bread, should not be embarrassed. You know what that means? Because normally, let's say tonight, if we were to have bread and wine, you always make the bracha on the bread first. Pas goes first, hamaitzi goes before anything. But Friday night, because of Kiddush, you're supposed to make a bracha on the wine first. So the poor challah is going to feel embarrassed because normally you make the bracha on the challah first. So you cover she'ein mekachin olav el alayayin v'hu yesh leidin kedima. So that's why we cover up the challah so that the challah should not feel embarrassed. There's a great lesson here. Chazal are teaching us something. The challah is sensitive. And if the challah is sensitive, it's a lesson really that humanity is sensitive. So what happens? Sometimes, you ever see a father sometimes yelling and screaming at the kids at the table? What are you screaming at? You're screaming at your wife because she didn't have everything ready on time? And you're embarrassing in front of everyone? And don't you realize the challah dekel is there to teach you a lesson? If you can't embarrass the challah, you can't embarrass your spouse or your kids. Do you know Rav Matis Yo Solomon says, there are many people who have kids that are at risk. And he said, they're not dropouts, they're pushouts. You know why they're pushouts? Because Friday night at the table, the parents forced them to say Divrei Torah. And they made it like a classroom. Your Shabbos table is not a classroom. Your Shabbos table is a time when people are supposed to enjoy each other. You don't put the kids under pressure. If they can say it, fine. It's wonderful. And if they can't say it, it's not the end of the world. Your home is supposed to be an Orei Miklot. It's a place where people escape to. Not that a child has to come to the table and worry. Maybe I'm not going to say this by Torah, right? And who knows what my father's going to do for me? I can tell you, I never let my kids go away for Shabbos. Almost never. I told them, anybody wants to see a Shabbos table, let them come to me. You can all bring your friends, no problem at all. One Shabbos, I let my daughter Elisheva go away. Most of Shabbos, she calls me up top. She says, you're not going to believe what happened Friday night. I said, oh gosh, tell me, what happened? She says, the father was yelling at every single one of his kids. At the end of the meal, not one of his kids was there. The only one at the table was me and him. I was afraid to ask where the wife was. That's a Shabbos table. That's a Shabbos table. Chesed is with your children as well. Avram had a relationship with his children because he was a Lev Tov. There's a way to criticize. There's a way to educate. And there's a way to validate even your own children and even your own spouse. I want to tell you what it means to validate someone. Mitzvah Hashem, this Hanukkah, we're going to have another market book, Mitzvah Hashem, printed, and I can't thank your father enough for the editing that he does as soon as he gets the story. I'm so grateful to Oscar, specifically Rav Nosson and Rav Meir, for what they do. For me personally and for everybody in Klal Yisrael. There's one story that I have there about Rav Yehuda Zev Siegel, the Manchester Rosh Hashiva. An incredible story. He got a call in Manchester that there was a girl that got engaged, and the father of the girl was on the phone. He wanted to know if the Rosh Hashiva could come to the phone and give a bracha. So the Rosh Hashiva said to the person who answered the phone, tell that father, I'll call back in 10 minutes. I'm not ready to give them the bracha yet. I'll call him in 10 minutes. 10 minutes later, Rav Segel calls, and he asks to speak to the older daughter who was not engaged. And he puts her on, and he gets her on the phone, and he says, I want to give you a bracha, because I know it must be very difficult for you that your younger sister got engaged. So first of all, I wish you mazel tov on your sister's engagement, and I give you a bracha that you should be zeichet to find your right zivug, and you should build a bayis nem and be Yisrael. Now, could I speak to your younger sister? Isn't that incredible? Imagine if he would have picked up the phone before and give a bracha to the kala and then asked to speak to the older sister. The older sister would think she's second fiddle. But he did just the opposite. He wanted to validate the pain of that older sister. So he didn't give the bracha right away. Rather, he did the ultimate chesed. And he made the call to her and made her feel special. And then he went and he gave the bracha. You know, recently in the Mir Yeshiva, there was a fellow, I cannot believe that this guy actually told this story in front of his in-laws. But I guess he must have felt comfortable enough to do it. He tells this story, a chosen at Sheva Brachas. He says, I want to tell you the story that changed my life. And he tells this story. He was a boy in the fifth grade. And there was a boy, let's call the boy Naftali. Naftali brought in a beautiful watch, a very expensive watch that his mother told him, don't bring to school. You're going to lose it or it's going to get broken. But Naftali wanted to show off at his watch. So he showed it to everybody. And then they went out to recess. And Naftali, of course, he wasn't going to take the watch out to recess because who knows, it could break while they're playing ball. So he left it on his desk. When he came back after recess, the watch was not there. And Naftali is crying in fifth grade. Rebbe, please, you got to help me. My mother's going to kill me. She told me not to take the watch. I took it anyway, and now I don't have it. Now, it just happened that the Rebbe was right outside the class during recess. He didn't leave that area. So there was no custodian that could have come in to take it. There was no kid from another class. So it was obvious that one of the boys in the class had taken it. So the Rebbe waits until all the boys sit down, and he says, Rabbeisai, Naftali is missing his watch. Now, it could be by mistake. Somebody just picked it up. They wanted to look at it and put it in their pocket by mistake. So whoever by mistake picked it up, please bring it forward to the desk. And nobody moved. So the Rebbe said, Rabbeisai, I don't want to do what I'm going to have to do. I don't want to search everybody's pockets. So again, I just want to say it happens by mistake. Somebody picked up the watch. And you know, usually when you pick up something, you put it in your pocket. Not that you wanted to steal it. I can't imagine anybody in this class wanted to steal anything. So anybody who has the watch by mistake, please bring up the watch. And nobody moved. So the Rebbe said, I'm sorry, Rabbeisai, I'm going to have to check everybody's pockets. So he took up all the 20 kids, and he lined them up against the blackboard. All the kids had to put their hands up like this. And he goes through all the pockets. And the chassan said, by the third boy, he had the watch. He says, I know he had the watch, because I was the third boy. But the Rebbe didn't stop there. The Rebbe went and he checked the pockets of the other 17 boys in the class. And after he went through the pockets of all the 20 boys, he said, Rabbi said, everybody could sit down, I have the watch. And the Chosson says, as I was walking to my seat, I took a look to see if the Rebbe was looking at me, and he wasn't even looking at me. Because I knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to save my dignity. He could have slaughtered me, because he asked twice nicely that we should give up the watch, and we didn't do it. And when I realized what my Rebbe was doing to me to save my covet, to save my dignity, I swore to myself that one day I'm going to be like him. That's what being a Baal Chesed is. That's what being sensitive is. That's what being a Leif Tov is. The Rebbe could have lashed out. The Rebbe was right. He asked the kids twice. He told them they took it by mistake. Who took it by mistake? But he was trying to give them a piece. He was trying to give them an opening. They should save face. And when they didn't take it, he went the extra mile. You want to hear a great story? And I only have Agmas Nefesh, that the guy who told me this story, he doesn't want I should use it in the book. He says he's going to write his own book. Okay, maybe he'll write his own book. I don't think so, but whatever. But it's a great story anyway. Listen to this. This fellow's a chosh of a fellow, a speaker in Eretz Yisrael. And he tells me he got a call to come to speak at a 10th anniversary dinner. And he didn't want to speak at this dinner. It's 3 hours away from the house. It was a schlep. Was up north in Eretz Yisrael. He didn't want to go, but you know, they pestered. They said, listen, it's 10th anniversary. You're a chosh of a person. Your name will be on the invitation. Everybody will come. So he agreed. The dinner was supposed to be on a Thursday night. That week, he was sick in the hospital for a full week with pneumonia. Tuesday afternoon, he comes home, and his wife says, you can't go to that dinner. You're so sick. It's supposed to rain and windy and everything. You'll end up back in the hospital. So listen, I made a commitment. I got to go. She said, but you can't. You'll get sick again. You'll be in the hospital. She said, look, I'll call. I'll call. You'll see. I'll get you off the hook. It's not a problem. He said, look, if you can get me off the hook, that's okay with me. So she calls the school, and the assistant principal answers, and the Rebbetzin says, you know, my husband was very sick. He's just not going to be able to come. And the assistant principal, what are you talking about? The name is on the invitation. 400 people are coming. It's a disgrace. It'll be a chil Hashem if he doesn't show up. He's got to show up. And she hangs up the phone. She goes back to her husband. She said, you see how that assistant principal spoke? What a chutzpah. She says, it's going to be a chil Hashem. Ooh, he says, it's going to be a chil Hashem. Oh, I've got to go. She said, how could you go? You're going to end up in a hospital. If she said it's going to be a chil Hashem, I've got to make every effort. I'm going. Fine. He tells me after he was introduced, he's walking up to the podium. He told me he thought of this. And he says, Rabbi Isai, I want to tell you why I am here tonight. He says, really, I was sick a whole week. I was in the hospital with pneumonia, and my wife told me I can't come. And I said, I got to come, because after all, I made a commitment. My wife said, don't worry, I'm going to call. And she called the assistant principal, and she told the assistant principal how sick I was, and she was afraid that I would get sicker if I came. And the assistant principal says, don't worry. He should be gesund. He should be well. Don't worry. Give him some hot soup. We have other dignitaries coming. He doesn't have to come. He doesn't have to string the chon. We'll invite him at another time when he's feeling well. And when I heard how kind that assistant principal was, I decided for her I have to come. And everybody got up and gave her a standing ovation. And she couldn't even look at him. He tells me that Friday afternoon, the next day, 5 minutes before Shabbos, he gets a call from her. She says, I want you to know I dialed you 10 times today, but every time you were going to pick up, I hung up the phone because I just couldn't even face you. But I had to call you before Shabbos because I apologize. I should never have spoken to your wife like that. There was just such a lahat. There was such a pressure in the office right before the dinner that I lost myself. But you are bigger than I am. You gave me the mussar that I deserve, but you did it in such a dignified way. And that standing ovation that I got is really something that you deserve. Because you got the message across in such a beautiful way. That's a Leif Tov. That's a person who goes the extra mile. There's no husband that's perfect. There's no wife that's perfect. There's no child that's perfect. And there's no in-law that's perfect. We all know that, right? But there's still a way to say things. There's still a way to criticize. With a Leif Tov, with softness. Thinking, how would you want somebody to speak to you? So I want to tell you one more aspect of relationships. I have a very close friend of mine who's a marriage counselor. That's not why he's my friend, but he happens to be my good friend, Mayor Wickler. Mayor Wickler once told me, He said, I'll tell you what the three most important words in marriage are. You know what they are? It's not the three you're thinking of. And it's not even yes, my dear. You know what the three most important words in marriage are? I was wrong. And if somebody could say, I was wrong, that's how they can cement relationships at home, in shul, in the community, and in Klal Yisrael. A person has to be able to say they're wrong. And I was so moved by that, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought how right he was. I remember I once had to speak on marriage at a group, a whole group, and I told over this word, and I go into the auditorium afterwards, and I hear a guy go over to his wife, you hear what the rabbi said? You were wrong! He got the message, right? But a person has to be able to say they made a mistake. So I want to tell you two unbelievable stories. The first story happened with a dear friend of mine. I think Harvey and Mr. Seidel, I think he was on our trip together, Harry Ashkenazi. Harry Ashkenazi is the most wonderful person that you could imagine. He happens to be a Sephardi named Ashkenazi, but that's how it is. But anyway, Harry lives in the Syrian community in Flatbush. And he tells me years ago, he was on the way to a chasana in Shari Zion, the big building on Ocean Parkway, it's called the Dome. And he's on a long line waiting, you know, valet parking, the Russian guys are going to park his car. And he was waiting such a long time, it was like 6 minutes already. 6 minutes he was online. And he was getting very impatient. And the lady in front of him, she never moves her car. She's busy talking to somebody else, and he's just losing it. Finally, right near the building, when she didn't move up, she was busy talking, this guy, Harry, went and took his car, went in front of her, and got the spot in valet parking. And David should go, that was the last spot valet parking had for that night, and now this poor woman had to go in the small streets of Flatbush and try to find a parking spot. When she finally found a parking spot, and she came to shul, she came to the wedding, oh, she met Harry Ashkenazi, she had some choice words for him. So they avoided each other the rest of the night, and that was that. This was in February. In October, before Rosh Hashanah, Harry is such a tzaddik, he's trying to think, who do I have to ask mechila from? Thinking his family? No, I'm good with everybody. His office? No, he's good with it. Shul? Everybody. Ooh, they, that lady. Ooh, that lady. Ooh, she was angry. So, he doesn't know her, he knew her name, so every community has its religious Jewish telephone book. So he gets the telephone book and he looks up the name, and sure enough, he calls her up. He says, listen, I don't know if you remember me. My name's Harry Ashkenazi, and you know, back in February, I took your parking spot and you were very angry. I just want to tell you, it's before Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, as they call it, and you have to get kapara, you have to get forgiveness. So please forgive me for what I did. I should not have done that, and I'm so sorry. She says, you remember what happened? 6 months ago? 8 months ago? I forgot about a month. Of course I forgive you. He says, you sure? Because I want to have a clean slate. I want to have kapara. I want to have forgiveness before I go into Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. She said, I can't get over you, Mr. Ashkenazi. You're amazing. Of course I forgive you. She was so touched by this. She never even knew you were supposed to do this. So she started thinking about all the people she has to call. Oh, she had a list. PTA at night, right? She had to go to the Rebbe, to the teacher. She had a few choice words. To the grocer, to the rabbi. She had a long list. She finished before Kol Nidre, don't worry. But okay. 2 years later, Harry Ashkenazi's daughter was read a shit-up to this lady's son. Could you imagine? And this lady said, Harry Ashkenazi, such a guy who's ready to say that he's sorry and he's asking for forgiveness months later, that's the family I want my son to marry into. And sure enough, wouldn't you believe they got married? And now this family, they both share the same grandchildren. Why? Because somebody was able to say, I was wrong. That's what relationships are. That's what menschlichkeit is. That's what chesed is all about. Chesed is not only the positive. Chesed is validating somebody's pain and saying that you made a mistake. So I want to tell you one more story. Again, this has to do with myself. It's embarrassing, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. Wherever I travel, I always take my camera. I love to take pictures. Albums and albums on Ashir. Fine. So that we all know, those of us who have had the schus to be in Eretz Yisrael on Sukkot, there's no time in the world that's better to be in Eretz Yisrael than Sukkot. Right? Rav Yitzchok, remember we used to go to Rav Yisrael Grossman together? Ah, the greatest thing in the world. To be able to be by Tzaddikim and to just to Kikar HaShabbos and just the whole Geula, just the whole before Yom Tov, during Yom Tov, the Simchas Beis HaSheva, absolutely incredible. So 1 year I was in Eretz Yisrael, and my son-in-law, who learned in one of the yeshivas there, so he said, you know, let's go to the Simchas Beis HaSheva. And I was very happy to go to that yeshiva, Simchas Beis HaSheva, because the Rosh Hashiva was a very chosher Talmud Chacham, and I had never heard him speak before, and I heard he was going to speak that night. So I figured, you know, he knew me, I'd been to his house numerous times, because after all, my son-in-law learned there, so I, you know, given some money for the yeshiva. So I wanted him to speak publicly. Fine. I get out of the car, and I come into this big yeshiva, and the place is packed, and you know, if you've seen it, the kids are on bleachers, and everybody's singing and dancing, and there's drums, and music is blaring from all the speakers. And the Rosh Hashiva was sitting there, and I had my camera. Now, I have tried to relive the next 5 seconds 100 times, but things happen so fast, so I still don't know exactly if I just was holding my camera, or if I picked up my camera to take a picture of him. But all I know is the second he saw me with that camera, he jumped up and he stood up and he started yelling at me in Yiddish, "Verdafti nomer dein bilder! Who needs to take pictures? Get out of here with your camera!" Oh man, I was hoping, like, the floor would open, I'd fall in, they'd cover me up and I was out of here. I couldn't believe it! I mean, he knew who I was, I was in his house, at least I thought he knew who I was. And you're like, what was his problem? He didn't like pictures on, did he hold that he didn't want to take a picture on Chol HaMoed? Did he hold that he didn't want to take a picture of him? All I know is I got out of there, I was humiliated. I was so hurt, I couldn't even drive home. I just had to sit in my car and just saw out. A few minutes later, I took hold of myself, I got home. I couldn't even talk to my wife about it. I couldn't even tell her about it. Fine. The next year, Sukkot, I came back there to Israel. Because my kids were still learning in Eretz Yisrael, I had a daughter in seminary. And then one night, Chol HaMoed, my son-in-law says to me, "Ta," says, "you want to go to the Simcha Beis HaSheva? We'll go back." You know, he didn't see what happened. I said, "I'm a little tired tonight. I don't know if I want to go." So he says, I said, "Well, listen, I'll be happy to drive you. And if you want to stay, we'll come at Gadol, I'll pick you up later or get a taxi, but I'll be happy to take you. But I'm just not in the mood tonight." Okay, I drive him. He says, "No, listen, I only want to stay if the Rosh Hashiva is there." So I said, "Okay, go inside. See if the Rosh Hashiva is there, you'll stay. If not, we'll go home together." He comes back 2 minutes later, the Rosh Hashiva is there. "Okay, good. Fine. I'll see you later." Fine. And I'm about to leave. And then I think, wait a second. I shouldn't be a baby. Man's a great man. Everybody here knows his Torah. Everybody knows his name. He's a famous personality. Whatever happened, happened. You have to get a bracha from a tzaddik on Yontif. I should be big. I'll take my camera, stuff it underneath the front seat, make sure the car's double locked. Nobody will even think that I dreamt of bringing a camera. I'll go and say good yontif. I'm finished. I'll go out. That's what I did. Sealed myself. Who knows what's going to happen? I'm ready to take a chance. You say good yontif. Put the camera underneath the seat. Go into the Beis Medrash. And it's singing and dancing. Every year it's the same. And the Rosh Hashiva is sitting and dancing. He's standing and dancing with his other Ramim, the Rosh Hashivas, and his Talmidim. But of course I'm not going to join. I don't know them. So I just stood where he was going to be sitting, and sure enough, he sits down. And all the Talmidim are standing around, they're all watching him. I don't know what they're looking at. They're watching him breathe. And, you know, he's standing there, you know, he's like a little bit uncomfortable. Everybody's sitting around just looking at him. Nobody's talking to him. And, you know, he's standing around. I'm here, and he's sitting over there. And all of a sudden, he turns around, and he sees me. And he jumps up, and he says in Yiddish, "Ich warte vor dir. I've been waiting for you." And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, where's the gun? You're like, well, what's he waiting for? Listen to what he says. He says, "The Rambam's off. The Rambam says, where you did the Aveira, that's where you have to do the tshuva. Last year, I embarrassed you here. I asked you for forgiveness. Tell me you forgive me." I was speechless. And for me to be speechless is a great accomplishment. I couldn't believe it. He takes me by the hand. He says, Zetzal, sit down next to me. He says to me again, "The Rambam says, where you did the Aveira, that's where you have to do the tshuva." I said, "Rosh Hashiva, how could you remember the incident? I remember, but how could you remember?" He said, "I know you were here in the summer, and I called for you, and you didn't come." Of course I didn't come. I thought he wanted money. I wasn't going to go. Besides, I couldn't even believe that he was calling. I couldn't believe, how did he know that I was there? He says to me, "Zog me divis me Michael." And then I realized how great he really was. That I'm nothing, nothing compared to him. Nothing. And he has to embarrass himself in front of all his Talmidim to ask for forgiveness. Because the Rambam says, where you did the Aveira, that's where you have to do tshuva. If that great man could say in front of all his Talmidim that he was wrong, what in the world should we say? That's godless. That's greatness. When a person is able to validate somebody's pain, that's what chesed really is. I'll tell you one more remarkable story. When is, let's mention Friday is when? Listen to this. You know, in Lakewood, there was a baby that was born to the grandson of Rav Michal Birnbaum. This is also going to be in the book. Rav Michal Birnbaum was the Mashkiach of Tveris Yerushalayim, a tremendous, tremendous tzaddik. So now his grandson had a son. This was his second child. The first one was named after his wife, this young man, his wife's grandfather. No, not grandfather, somebody else. And now everybody was positive, no question. The baby, the first baby, was named on the wife's side. So this baby will be named on his side. And for sure that he'll name him after Rav Michal. They named the baby. It's after her grandfather, not Rav Michal. Nobody could believe it. You gave your wife both names, the first child and the second child, and besides, you had a grandfather who was such a tzaddik. How could you not name after Rav Michal Feinstein, Rav Michal Birnbaum? So at the Suda, the young fellow got up and he spoke and he said something that was so unbelievable. I had to not only call him, I had to call his mother just to verify it. I couldn't believe it. He said, before Rav Michal passed away, he said he knows that he's going to die. And he knows that his grandchildren will have boys. And they'll want a name after him. So he said, but I want it to be known that if at that bris there's a grandmother who is an almana and her husband doesn't have a name yet, name after that zayda and don't name after me. Because his almana had passed away already. So he was not worried about his getting a name, but he was worried about that almana. She should have that nachas ruach that a baby is named for her husband. That's godless. That's greatness. That's chesed. That's a leif toiv. That's validating an almana's pain. How many of us here that have mothers that are almanas? Or aunts that are almanas? Do you ever call them? Do you ever talk to them? Besides Yom Tovim? They're lonely people. They're lonely people in this neighborhood. You have to reach out to these people. Many of them don't want to come to shul because they're embarrassed. Nobody looks at them. Nobody talks to them. Because they feel they've passed their prime already. These are the people you have to reach out to. The wealthy people, the bakovadik people, they have plenty of cover. They don't need you. But it's those lonely people. That's what a leif tov is all about. So I just want to end just with this great story. It's a delightful story about a person who was so beloved. A person who everybody loved because he had the ultimate leif tov. And that was the Bob of a Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Halberstam. Rav Shlomo Halberstam, he once went to visit the Menahel of his school, the Menahel in Bobov. They were in Crown Heights. This was before they were in Borough Park. The Menahel himself told me this story, Rav Zisha Wallman. And he says like this, that it was Shushan Purim, the day after Purim. And Rav Zisha told me that he was married, he had no children, it was 7 years already. And the Rebbe's there, the Rebbe had something to drink, and the Rebbe had a piece of cake. And the Rebbe gets up to leave, you know, says good day. So he said, oh Rebbe, I was hoping that the Rebbe would give me a bracha. He said, Rav Zisha, I gave you a bracha. He said, you gave me a bracha? He said, yeah. I said, boire nefashis. I had something to drink, and I said, boire nefashis. Boire nefashis means life should be created. I had in mind that you and your wife should be able to create children, and you'll be blessed with children. He said, oh Rebbe, I heard you say the bracha. I didn't realize that it was meant for me. Thank you so much. So then, Rav Shmuel Horowitz was the gabbai of the Rebbe. And he also didn't have children. So as he's walking out with the Rebbe, he says, Rebbe, what about me? I also wanted a bracha. He said, I had you in mind. He said, you did? Yeah, because a boy in the flesh is rabbis. Rabbis means a lot. So boy in the flesh, I had a mind for the fullness. And rabbis, I had a mind for you, the Horowitzes. And wouldn't you know it, that year, Rabbi Fullman told me he had a little girl. And that year, Rabbi Horowitz had a little boy. And 18 years later, they married each other. And now they had Baruch Hashem many children, and they share the same grandchildren. That's really what we came here tonight. Boirei nefashes rabbis. You know, this is Parshas Vayera. And in Parshas Vayera, we get to see how Avram was the ultimate Baal Chesed. Chesed l'Avram. Where do we see it from? The way he treated the Malachim. We came here to learn how to build our lives, to build our spiritual lives, to build the lives of others, and to validate others. To be that Lev Tov that Avraham Radetzky was. And that's why it's no accident that his 20th Yahrzeit comes out on that Parsha when we learn about the Chesed of Avraham, the paragon of what it means to care for other people. The Eibushe should help that each and every one of us should take these lessons into our hearts. Avraham didn't take everything with him. He left his great reputation, his Lev Tov, and that's why I'm so happy that we met in here tonight and not in the big shul. Because this is where I remember Rabbi Avraham with Rabbi Meshi Gordon when he was the president here for so many, many years. So Joey, I hope you don't mind that we're not in the other room, but you know, this is the right place for tonight. Maybe she should help that all of us should be able to elevate our lives, elevate our souls, and it should be a schus for the heaven and the neshama of Avraham Radetzky. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Krohn, for this inspirational lecture. Thank you, Rabbi Kusansky and Bnei Yeshurun for hosting. May Avram's neshama not only have an aliyah in the merit of our learning tonight, but also in the merit of the acts of chesed that we will perform in his memory. Please join our family in the lobby outside for some refreshments, and we will be davening Maariv here tonight.